Prepare to be astonished!
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. I'm so glad to be here tonight. It's been a good summer. Yeah, we're just like plowing right through.
It's been a busy summer.
It's been crazy busy. But that's good. Good busy.
I think a lot of people now measure busyness in town by the line at the Oregon Film Museum.
Ooh, that's a good judge.
If they just see people coming and going, they're like, oh, it's busy. But when they see a line, they're like, wow, the town's packed.
Right, yeah.
So there's been a line for a while.
But it's also been great weather for all the selfies. I love driving by the Flavel House and people are getting their selfies. It was making me think we need a selfie spot because they need to go like across the streets or up. I don't know.
Well, see, there's a plan I've got that okay. we have not done yet. I want to have, and it'll be to the right of, if you're facing the carriage house, to the right of the carriage house.
Okay.
And where the fence ends, we're going to make a Captain Flavel standing there. And I don't know what he'll be holding, but it'll be X number of days without rain or with rain. And we'll have like wooden slat numbers that we put on.
Oh, that's great.
And it's the perfect view of the side of the house.
Oh, perfect.
So people will take, I think they will take selfies with this George Flavel and the countdown, but I don't know which one is funnier. X number of days with rain or without rain.
Ooh, well, you could change it possibly.
No, because it'll
be painted.
And then we'll have like little wood slats we'll have to put out every day on little hooks.
I think there's a way to do it both ways.
One way or the other. You don't need both.
Right. In the summertime, you do it one.
But if you were a visitor, which would be funnier to you? You know, 18 days without rain or 3 days with rain?
All right. We'll send that out there to our listeners. Let us know.
So I think it's without rain.
Okay.
Is my guess. Is my sneaking suspicion that's the better one to do. But I don't know yet.
Okay.
So that was my response to your selfie. That'll be a good.
So we're getting there.
It'll be a good spot for a selfie.
So before we get into this day in history, I'm going to bring back our word of the day.
You have a segment.
Because I started this a couple months ago at this point.
It's historic words of the day.
Historic, yes.
Historic words.
And then I stopped doing it.
You did it once.
I did it once.
And then never did it again.
So
it's a new segment. We're going to do it every day.
Today's historic word is absquatulate.
Okay, and we have to guess, try to guess before you tell us.
Okay.
Absquatulate, I think it is going to the bathroom in the woods without a privy.
Absquatulate.
I think a swaying back and forth.
Oh.
That's a good guess.
It's to abscond. And it's actually to run off with someone in a hurry, to abscond, absquatulate.
To run off with something or someone?
Someone. In a hurry. It's 19th century English.
Oh. Not necessarily to get married.
Nope.
Or just
it could be to run in a hurry. Yeah.
Wow.
They had no choice but to absquatulate, run away.
I like that.
So there we go. So that's our word today. And we do have a guest.
We do.
Janet Weinman. She and I have been talking about this since I think I started my word of the day about having her as a guest. And we finally got her in. So thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get, because this is going to be a great show.
Yes.
Let's get through the history highlights. These
let's
are the
do
things
it.
That happen tomorrow. As always, these are icebreakers or conversation starters, although that word would be a great one.
Exactly.
So these are things that happened on July 17th, 1762. Catherine II becomes Tsarina of Russia following the murder of Peter III.
Ooh.
Oh. I don't know why I like the word Tsarina. Catherine II.
Yeah.
1861, U.S. Congress authorizes paper money. I'm not a money expert.
1861.
Doesn't that seem late?
Yes,
it does.
Now I'm thinking perhaps states were issuing paper money and coinage, but that just seems really late to me. Huh. So we may have to do some more research on
that. Yeah, there's a story there.
1897, the first ship arrives in Seattle carrying gold from the Yukon.
Oh,
wow.
And we've done some shows on
that. Yes. Yep, the gold rush.
Yeah.
1918, back to Russia. The Romanov royal family are executed by a Bolshevik firing squad in the basement of some house. Oh. 1955. Disneyland opens.
Yes.
Disneyland opens.
Oh, my goodness.
So I have a little bit on this.
There's a huge, long story about it.
There is. So a little. I'll just do a little bit of. So he wanted to expand his studio in Burbank, where he was already filming movies, making his shows. But the city officials, those darn city officials, gave him a lot of trouble. And they were not on board with just expanding it, because it wasn't going to be a theme park just yet. So he looked further into the rural area of Anaheim, which was just next to Los Angeles. I love that word. I mean, it's just like, can we even imagine considering Anaheim? Or, I mean, they don't consider Los Angeles rural at that point, but it's but it's close to. It's like a suburb.
Yeah.
And largely this then, they got a much larger plot for a much greater or lesser price and were able to expand the idea to a theme park, which is what he wanted to do. And yeah.
See, I didn't print this out, but I know opening day was like a disaster. Because they were rushing, because he had said we're going to open on this day, and there was like live broadcasts, but the road, the tar in the roads were still so sticky that people were like getting stuck.
Oh no!
And then I think the plumbers had said you can either have water fountains or you can have toilets.
Oh.
And he chose toilets, and it was
thank goodness.
It was terribly hot, and nobody could get a drink of water.
Those kind of fountains. I was thinking fountains.
And then there was like drinking water fountains. And then I think there was something about tickets that they expected like X number, but somehow everybody that got a ticket came, so that was three times as many people as they thought they would have.
Oh, wow.
We should do a show, because there's a whole long
fun.
Story about that.
I like that.
This one was fun to me. I like this one. 1967, Jimi Hendrix drops out as the opening act for the Monkees. Jimi Hendrix was the opening act for the Monkees.
Amazing.
And he dropped out halfway through the tour.
Oh, wow.
He's like, nope, not my style of music.
How good must you be to have Jimi Hendrix as your opening act?
Well, and it says a lot about the time too, right?
Yeah. I mean, but 1967, he was already somebody.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I know you're not going to like the date, but you're going to accept why I'm saying it. 2020. Alana doesn't like when it's recent. She doesn't consider it history. 2020, Congressman and civil rights leader John Lewis dies.
Oh, yes.
I love John Lewis.
Yes.
All right, but our history highlight of the day, thing I think had the most impact on history, 1945, the Potsdam Conference begins. It's where the Joseph Stalin and Churchill and Harry Truman all get together, and it really sets the stage. It begins the tensions of the Soviet Union, and they're talking about how they're going to divide up Europe, and there's lots of things that happen there that just lead to the Cold War.
Yeah.
And that's also where Harry Truman kind of leans over at one point and says to Stalin, he starts to describe that we have this new weapon. He doesn't say it's an atomic bomb, because we haven't used it yet at that point. And he just starts explaining, like, hey, we've developed this weapon. And Stalin's just like, yeah, okay. And everybody suspects that Stalin already knew all about it.
Oh,
that spies had already told him everything. Yeah. And that's why he's like, oh, yeah, whatever, sure.
The threat did not work.
The Potsdam Conference, 1945.
Yes, good one. The only one we missed, 2009. Ooh. So just on the cusp for me. American journalist Walter Cronkite, the longtime anchor of CBS Evening News, passed away at the age of 92. Walter at one Cronkite. Time was called the most trusted man in America.
So, do you think he'd be successful today?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't.
And everybody did trust him. Everybody liked him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and things needed to change. As a woman who went into journalism, you know, the journalism that he helped create and to spawn really did not include women at the time, right? So
Have a problem with nothing but old white men?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do. However, you know, I appreciate the context of information that he wanted to get out, the quality of information as well, and the accuracy. So so that definitely made a difference.
Yeah.
But yes, things needed to change, and we needed to allow more voices, right, to tell the stories, because we know that you got to tell the stories, and they got to be inclusive. So we have someone here to tell stories about her life, Janet. Yeah. Thank you again for coming. And let's just start with a little background. Are you from the area? What brings you to the North Coast?
To the North Coast. Well, I was born and raised in the Mojave Desert.
Oh, my gosh.
In a place called China Lake, Ridgecrest. China Lake is a naval weapons center in the middle of the desert.
Wow.
It was Naval Ordnance Test Station. They were testing, I believe, out in the desert, but they changed to a weapons center. So my mother and father were both teachers, and they were allowed on the military base. Now, that was not normal for a lot of places, but I guess out in the middle of the desert, they didn't really have much of a town outside of the military base, and so we were on the base, which was interesting. And also having parents that were teachers was interesting.
So civilians. You were all civilians, yes. On the base. Okay.
Yes. And, of course, having my father was at the high school, and there was only one high school. You know, this was not that big a town. I think there were 400 graduates each year. So the town was probably, I'm wanting to say there was probably 15,000.
Okay.
In the town. I'm not quite sure how many people lived in the base and in the small town of Ridgecrest, which is right next to it. But as a child, I liked to catch tiny lizards. They were called side blotches, and they were about 2 inches long. And they were one of my favorite things to do, was catch tiny lizards. And I wasn't afraid of iguanas and chuckawallas. Now, some of the other girls were, and so guys would come up with a chuckawalla and try to scare them. Those are kind of weird things that, you know, people in the desert do. But it was dry there. And when I moved away, I went to college, and when my boyfriend and my husband would go up to visit my parents, they had a swimming pool. And we could get in the water and get back out, and then about 5 minutes later, the swimsuit was completely dry.
Oh my
gosh. It's very dry, dry there. But I do remember also part of my history, and every kid that's in any desert will agree with this. We had to take our coat in the morning because it was so cold. This would be November, December, January, February, or March. It would be cold. We would have to have a coat. It would be very cold if we were going to walk to school without a coat. But at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's like 85 to 90, and we did not want that coat. We just wanted to drag that coat. Of course, it would be filthy. We wouldn't be able to do anything with it. So we had to carry our coats. And, oh, I still remember that, not wanting that coat anymore. I was like, oh, I have to take that all the way home now.
Right.
And every morning, I was really thankful I had brought it home. So, yeah.
So where did you go to college?
I went to UC Irvine.
Okay.
And before I went, now my parents knew a lot of different people. My father was a tennis coach, and so he was very extroverted, so he got to know everyone. And there were a lot of exchange students that came and went, and so he knew a lot of them because some of them would play tennis. And so I was taking French, and I had a French exchange student who came to stay at my house. So I was going to go to stay at her house. And the next-door neighbor, who was in the military, because we were on the base, and they were going to go to Japan. And I was their babysitter, and I was like 16, 17, 18, so I knew them really well. And they were going to go to Japan, so they invited me to go there. So we went to the travel agent to ask about the tickets for both of those places when I graduated. And she said, it's actually cheaper if you just keep going one way.
Oh.
I was like, wait, you mean not go to France and home and then back to Japan and home? Oh. It's actually cheaper if I just kept going. So that's what I did. And I got to go to, I went to England, then to France, and then to Germany, and up to Holland, then down to Italy, and over to, we landed in Istanbul, and then went on to Iran, and I stayed in Iran with a family that had been in the exchange program.
Oh, wow.
And then I went to Taiwan briefly, and then up to Japan for my month with my friends that had been next door. And that was right after I graduated from high school.
So you're young.
How long of a trip was this?
It was 6 months.
Wow.
It took six months to do the whole trip. Because I stayed for the whole summer in France. And actually, when I was with my French family, we went to Spain because everybody in France in August goes to Spain. That's their thing to do. I've since learned that most of the Germans go to Italy in the month of August. But so, Europeans have their ways. But August is the month for most of them to have the whole month off. And so when I came back, I was much more interested in languages, and I wanted to learn Persian. And they didn't have Persian at UC Irvine, but I was a French major, so I knew some French by that time. And UCLA had Persian, so I went and took Persian there, which is, it's Farsi, is actually the,
okay.
It's not, we call it Persian, but they would say it's Farsi.
Right.
And do you
same
still,
as Deutsch versus German.
Oh, you know, do you still speak Farsi then?
I can say a few things, and I brushed up on it to speak with the gal that has the cute little pink, the food cart that has this got the Paris picture on it. She's actually originally she is Persian.
Okay.
So I went over and I said, "Hale shomishete," and she said, "Panistan." She was just blown away that I could say a few things. So that was really fun.
So what was Iran like? At that time, especially being a woman.
Being a woman and being there is very, very... Tehran was extremely huge. It's just sprawling. It was. It felt like it was like 10 Los Angeleses. It was just when I was flying in and seeing the lights, and it just was amazing how sprawling it was. And cars are like in Italy where you just don't... You don't follow any rules of the road. You're just driving, and you just risk your life if you want to try to squeeze in with others.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, wow. Being in a car is really exciting. I don't know if it's a good
Sounds
kind
terrifying.
Of exciting.
Yeah.
But I remember that, and I remember that I wanted to make a skirt like the gal Majgan had, and she just measured my waist, and she measured my length, and then she cut out all the pieces, and she showed me how she would sew. And her machine, you have a foot pedal. It was one of the ones we would have had way back when. No electricity on it. And she just knew how to make it, so it fit me perfect.
Oh,
so it was
fun.
Pretty cool to see that. And their food was amazing. Absolutely amazing. They have amazing spices. Mm. So I was really fascinated by the language, the way it was written, and the way it was spoken. It sounded a little bit like French, but it wasn't. Oh. It was like, oh, did I forget all my French? That's how similar it seemed to me.
Right.
Yeah.
But nothing the same.
No, it was not. Well, the word thank you, they've adopted that from France. So they say merci.
Oh,
merci
is
there.
And as a young woman, were you able to travel around in Iran freely? Were you intimidated at all?
No. Well, I didn't really want to try because I didn't understand the language very well. So I went with the family. Mm-hmm. And mostly I stayed with Marjan and went to the market and saw all the amazing spices. Just, it's so colorful and so beautiful. The markets are just incredible. And they had family come to their house. And so I got to see their cousins and meet the family members. But I didn't really understand much of the language. They spoke some English to me, but I didn't really understand any Persian at that point. So then when I came back and I took some Persian, but then I decided that I didn't want to go back over. And I hadn't signed up for the dorms again. And so I'd been there at UC Irvine for 6 months, from January to June. And you're supposed to sign up for the dorms in, like, May. Well, I didn't. Well, my dad was really upset. You mean to tell me we're going to have to find you? You're going to have to find a place to live. So we found a friend of my, one of the tennis players' mother lived on Balboa Island. And it's very ritzy.
Yeah.
And she had a little place up above. in a little apartment. So I got to stay there with another gal who happened to be from Ridgecrest. So it was great fun to have this other gal, Deb, and she was going to go to Egypt for her junior year abroad. And I said, well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to France. So I decided I was going to go back to France for my junior year, and she went off to Egypt. And the two of us had a great time. She had a great time, and I had a great time. But when we came back, we decided we wanted to be roommates again. And this time, we looked on the peninsula, because there's a Balboa Island, and there's a Balboa Peninsula. So we were on the peninsula, and we were on the corner of a very busy street, but it's one street just down our road is where the beach is.
How nice.
So it's very, very nice. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so that's where I met my husband. I'd take my beach towel down to the beach, and I'd have like 5 or 6 books, maybe 8. No, probably only 5, but I was going to study while I was down there getting my suntan.
Sure.
And he walked by saying, what kind of books are you reading or something? And we started talking, and he actually had the beachfront house.
Oh, how nice.
So I got to know him because he was just down the street. But it was still hilarious that you were taking all these books down to the beach. Is this I'm really going to study on the beach?
Right.
Now, was he really curious about what books you were reading?
Yeah.
Or was that just an obvious way to introduce himself and start a conversation?
Yeah. I mean, they were mostly novels. I think I was reading French novels, French literature at
that
time.
How interesting. Yeah. He's like, okay. Yeah. So what brought you guys, so you're a worldwide traveler at this point. Yeah. You're still young. I mean, 18, 19, 20s. What happens next?
Well, and so after we got married, my husband's job was with Santa Fe International, which was an oil rig company, and they had a position down in Venezuela. And then we came back and we did a couple other different things, and then we were in Irvine, and that's where their headquarters is, and I can still remember I was expecting my second little one, and my husband had taken our first, our daughter, who's, she was about 3. They were on a walk and they saw this guy come out of a house screaming at another guy and using a crowbar. And he was like, okay, I don't really want to live here. And so we decided we were going to come up to, they offered him a job that was a 1 to 3 month assignment here for the platforms that are built for the for Alaska. And so what they do is they build these platforms for the machines before the ice breaks.
Oh.
And it has something to do with that. So they were, it was a 1 to 3 month assignment. I wanted to move everything. I wanted to come up here that badly that I was going to move our whole, you know, we're going to get them moving around. We're moving.
Yeah.
We're not just temporarily going to be there. And the assignment ended up being about 9 months. They always end up being a little longer than they think they are. And then after that job was finished, he went on and worked with their competitor, Fluor, which is also in Irvine, and they also had more of the same kind of work here. And that was only another 3 or 4 months. And at that point, he met a young man who was working for Foghorn Realty, who said, oh, you should do some, you could stay here and you could become a realtor. And I thought, well, I don't know about that. But the guy said, oh, yeah, you can make a real good living. Well, you know, back in those days, it really wasn't that great a living. I mean, as far as ways to make money and be stable, that's really not probably the best. But we loved it here, and so we decided to stay. And then we moved out to the country, and we raised our kids there. So we have 5 kiddos, and Katie's in Montana, Matthew's in Germany, Robbie's in Minnesota, and Clara and Betsy now live here.
Oh, so I love
that.
Kind
of nice that they're back.
So how long have you been here then?
Since Matthew was 1 year old, and he's 39.
Oh, my goodness.
So 38 years.
So a 1 to 3 month gig, and you stayed 39 years. I love that.
Exactly. Exactly. We just decided we did not want to be in LA. In Irvine, which is, you know,
well, it's
Orange County.
Too, because you lived in so many places that were deserts. Even when you vacationed other than Paris or France.
She's getting caught up on the rain.
Yeah. I mean, how did you adjust? Did you love it?
I wanted greenery. Yeah.
You did.
Yeah. And also, I think in California, you end up outdoors a lot. And so this was a nice change from that.
Yeah,
I was able to do some painting, and I loved read, and I loved a lot of things were indoor things.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, we can do that. You did say earlier you had a story to share.
About my hearing.
Yes.
Well, my kids knew that I couldn't hear very well, and sometimes it was obvious. And one time we were driving, we were going to go to Portland, and we're going to see some friends. We're going to stay overnight. I'm pretty sure we were staying there overnight because it's a two-hour drive. We were not going to just come home that day. And they were, I'm wanting to say that Clara was probably 6 and Betsy was probably 2.5 to 3, somewhere around there. And the cat was in the car, and her name is Henry because she was shortened for Henrietta. And Henrietta is a very sweet little cat, but you know, we were going to stay overnight in Portland, and I wasn't going to have a cat. But I did not know that the cat was with us. So I'm driving along, and we're only about a mile from the house, maybe 2. And I'm driving along, and it's a suburban. It's a big, huge old suburban. We called it the Burbie. And, so we're in the Burbie, and we're driving along, and Clara says, "Mom, Betsy has Henry." And I thought she said, "Betsy has a penny." And I'm driving along. I said, "Well, that's nice." And it's quiet. And they, because I'm sure that my son, Rob, was probably 9 at that point. He's probably looking at Clara going, "Huh."
Yeah.
And so then they finally said it again. And I said, "Okay, that's nice. She has a penny." Something like that. And they said, "No, Mom, she has Henrietta. She has Henry." They said it really loud, and I slam on the brakes, and they go, "Right response." So, yeah, my hearing was really not so great, and they knew it, and sometimes they would play on it, but that time was one where they knew I was saying I was not reacting the way they wanted me to react.
Yeah.
Slept. "No, we're not going to have that cat with us the whole way."
Their wheels are turning. "Can we bring the cat? Can we do this?
We still have time right now." It's a funny joke to turn around, but
how mad is she going to be?
Another 10 minutes, it's not happening.
All right. Funny.
So as we wrap up, you're involved in lots of local organizations, AAUW, La Leche, anything else or anything you want to share about those amazing organizations and why you choose to support them in our last minute?
Well, I love being around other mothers and babies and helping empower mothers with their decision to breastfeed. And I felt very, very committed to that because it was so life-changing for me to have that support when they were young. So that's for La Leche League, then AAUW, the women's being having equal pay, and many, many things that are in AAUW. And then, of course, the Liberty Theater. I loved being an usher there.
Good. Yeah. Well, thank you. We're so glad that you were able to share a part of your story with us and that you are in our community 49 years later.
This could be a two-parter.
I know, or 3 or 4, right, as always. But thank you, Janet.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Go make some history. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.